The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
So now let's turn to our first guest this afternoon. We are very happy to welcome on the Ring Central phone line, Jonathan Golub, Chief Equity Strategist at UBS. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Vonnie.
Jonathan, a big day of news already today, and it's supposed to be a sleepy Monday in June.
Yeah, I mean, if I look at the market, I think the obsession still remains, the Fed and comments from, Fed officials and others, and it's going to really be something the market, I think, obsesses about for quite a while.
Right, exactly. Equities have been the focus for some time. The bond market back up in rates spooked equities a little bit for a while, did it?
You really have to look at why rates are going up. If rates are going up because the economy is getting stronger, then that should be a very good thing for stocks. If rates are going up, on the other hand, because people are concerned that QE is going to get pulled and that the Fed is going to start tapering back, then that's not good for stocks. What's a little bit confusing for me, and I think for others who are looking at the markets, is rates are rising not because of inflation and growth, but really because of Fed concerns, and yet stocks are moving up with it. You would think it would be a little bit of a tougher environment for stocks than it's actually played out to be.
Well, is this market, do you think, Jonathan, trading ahead of reality? I mean, we're not really expecting any tapering before September, and even when we do get it, it's just tapering. It's not tightening.
You know, it's a great question. The market is always going to want to get ahead of things, but we're going to be looking at an environment where the Fed is very, very accommodative for as far as the eye can see. Now, as equity investors, as soon as you see the first move or maybe even the first threat of a move, you start to adjust your thinking. But the Fed is clearly going to have a zero interest rate policy well into next year or beyond, and we're going to see the Fed continuing to buy bonds. Again, even if they start tapering at the next meeting, they'll still be buying bonds well into next year.
So what are you attributing the strength in equity markets to then?
You know, I think there's a couple of things. First, it's really important. The stock market, I mean, the economy is not strong. You're looking at an economy that's running, in the 2% kind of range. Expectations are about 2% economic growth. You have inflation, which is very weak. So it's not an economic strength thing. I think that what you've seen this year is tail risk, the risk that, U.S. budgetary issues would go badly or that European problems would blow things up. Those have largely gone away, and or at least gone away in investors' minds, even if they still are out there as issues. And that is allowing investors to place a higher multiple on stocks than they probably thought that they would, going back 6 months ago.
And yet we didn't really get any reaction this morning to that headline that crossed the Bloomberg that S&P had upgraded its outlook from negative to stable, this after 2 years ago downgrading the credit rating of the United States. I mean, what did you think when you saw that headline, Jonathan? Did you just smile and look away, or did you think...
It's a funny thing. I think market participants very often assume that rating agencies are a little bit behind the curve, and to a certain extent, I mean, what we know is that the U.S. economy is on the mend. It is not a strong economy, but the jobs picture is getting better, even if it's getting better slowly. The consumer is engaged. The one area that's most disappointing to me is that businesses remain incredibly reluctant to extend risk. So M&A activity is much weaker than normal. CapEx spending is weaker than normal. Corporations are actually increasing. It was very surprising when we looked at the first quarter data that the corporate cash levels actually increased in the first quarter among S&P 500 companies. So there's almost two independent economies. You have the consumer that's a bit healthier, and businesses that still remain quite reluctant to buy into that success.
We had Steve Hanke from Johns Hopkins earlier on, and of course he makes the argument that businesses, but more so the small and medium-sized businesses, they just can't get access to credit. So even if they want to expand CapEx, they can't.
I think that's partially true. That picture is getting a little bit better as we speak. The further away we get from the crisis, the more that credit is becoming available to businesses that are credit worthy. But and what I'm commenting, because mostly I'm talking about large stocks that people would have in their personal portfolios, those companies have had access to credit for quite a while, but are still somewhat reluctant, given the actions of Fed and policymakers and government deficits, to be more aggressive in taking risks.
Jonathan, you'll be joining us again in a moment, where we'll get into some of the more finer details, let's say, of this market and where you should be putting your money right now. You're listening to the Hayes Advantage on Bloomberg Radio. Later on, we'll be also joining the Apple Worldwide Developers Conference to see what Tim Cook has to say. This is Bloomberg Radio. And we want to return now to our guest, Jonathan Golub. He's Chief Equity Strategist at UBS, and he's been explaining to us a little bit about what he sees as a tale of two economies, the business versus the consumer economy. Business economy perhaps lagging the consumer economy just a little bit. Jonathan, you know, you seem to be pretty optimistic, and yet your target for the S&P 500 this year is 1425. It's the second gloomiest in the Bloomberg survey, and it would in fact be a drop of 12.6% from where we are now, or even a little more than that. Why the gloom?
Well, I mean, at first, I think there's opportunities to make money in the market, depending on where you place your bets. But we are at the beginning of a of this Fed chatter over when they're going to start to pull some of this accommodation. And if you look at the swings that we've had in the markets, the volatility, that's picked up, and that tends to be a negative somewhat for stocks. So I think in the short run you have that, and we've also seen in the last, I'd say, 6 or 8 weeks, we've seen a little bit more weakness in some of the economic data. So I do think that we may be in a, you know, in a slow patch, and if you look at what's happened the last few years, as we've entered this time of year, a little bit of more volatility, a little bit more economic weakness, and it puts some downside pressure. But I do, like I said at the beginning, I do think there are areas you can make money regardless.
Well, we'll get to that in a second, but Jonathan, do you think then that this market is overpriced where it is?
Yeah, you'd have to say, you know, all else being equal, I think if you said, do I think stocks will be lower in a month or 2 months from now? Probably yes. If you said to me, do I think in a year or 2 years for you know, your listeners who have a slightly longer term investment horizon, I think that stocks will clearly be higher.
Okay, so this is a semi-permanent or semi-temporary, I suppose, drop down for stocks. So you said then that there is still plenty of money to be made in this market. Is it a stock picker's environment?
Yeah, I think that there's a number of, you know, almost think about it as themes. If you look at what the impact of all this easy money has been, it's allowed people to refinance their homes. It's created a positive wealth effect in that people have their stock and bond portfolios have risen, you know, over the last, you know, really throughout the recovery, and that's creating a bit more spending. And all of that means that consumers are in pretty decent shape, even if it's a reasonably anemic economy. And then if you look at businesses that are dependent on business confidence. So let's say, for example, many technology companies need business spending to be strong, or industrial companies need business spending to be strong. And those parts of the economy, or those parts of the stock market, have been a lot softer. And I think that that trend of a stronger consumer and weaker results in, let's say, technology and industrials is likely to persist for a while.
In other words, overweight things like consumer discretionary?
Overweight discretionary. I think you can even overweight many consumer staples names. Even if they're looking a little pricey, they still benefit from a strong consumer.
Hmm. What gives you such faith in the consumer? I mean, I know consumer confidence figures have been up, and we'll have more confidence figures this week, at least retail figures this week. And I believe on Friday we're getting a Michigan number as well. The June data for Michigan should be coming on Friday. But, you know, confidence data is one thing and actual spending is another, right?
Yeah, and first of all, when I think about the consumer, you're talking about a variety of different areas. So you're talking about, you know, in the consumer sector, we'd also include autos, and we've had a big pickup in auto sales, which has continued throughout the recovery. Obviously, housing, which is part of the consumer suite, has been very strong, and that's not only home builders, but it could be Home Depot, it could be companies that make fixtures for housing and the like. Those are areas that have been strong. What's somewhat interesting is that restaurants and retailers have been a little bit softer than some of those other areas. Part of that is that people are spending more on things like cell phone and their home internet, and some of that's coming out of some of that retail sales. But the whole suite of consumer spending is pretty solid.
Well, you know, interestingly, this morning, Quincy Crosby from Prudential mentioned the financials. She thinks that, you know, an environment where the Fed begins to taper and the anticipation is for the Fed to tighten at some point, that financials, diversified financials particularly, should do well. What do you make of that argument?
Oh, yeah, we recently upgraded financials on very much the same argument that Quincy laid out. I mean, the other thing which is positive for financials is many people have not been able to refinance their homes even when rates were really low because they didn't have enough home equity. And as the value of homes goes up, it allows people to refinance their homes, which is a positive thing for banks because they're obviously exposed to credit. So loan losses are really low because the economy is continuing to move forward. And a steeper yield curve with the interest rates up a little bit on the 10-year bond is also positive for banks.
So you think that there's going to be another wave of refinancings?
I don't know if you can have another wave, but I do think that home values going up does help banks, especially those that are exposed to the southern part of the country, California, Florida, Nevada, that have had you know more damage to their real estate during the downturn. They're continuing to see more improvement, and that'll help some of those types of banks, separate from the large money center banks.
All right. So, what about then places where we should avoid? You know, places we should avoid, places where we should stay away.
Right. So, you know, there's a couple of areas. You know, telcos and utilities, which are typically places people go for defense. And as I said, in the short run, I think that stock market's going to be perhaps sloppy with all of this Fed chatter and some weak economic data. I would rather play defense in areas where at least there's underlying growth, and you're not seeing that in telco and utility the way that you would see it in, let's say, pharmaceutical companies or healthcare companies in general or consumer staples names. So if you search, we just put out a note today, but if you're searching for yield, you want to make sure that you're looking at businesses that also have underlying growth. And interesting now, many technology companies like an Apple or KLA Tencor and the like have a decent dividend and also have underlying growth, where historically people wouldn't have looked there.
So you'd be saying buy a stock like Apple, for example?
If for an investor who's looking for a dividend, it's really interesting that it's something that's, you know, that they couldn't have participated in the past, and now they possibly can, not as a technology growth play, but really as a dividend play with underlying growth underneath it.
And will we be seeing many more companies, do you think, Jonathan, issuing dividends or raising their dividends throughout the rest of the year?
It's interesting. We've actually seen in the last year the dividend payout ratio has been going up because companies, that same reluctance to invest in their underlying businesses, they are increasing the amount of dividends paid out. So one of the, again, in this report that we put out this morning, we looked at two things. Are companies growing their earnings, but are they also willing to, you know, give back the cash? And in the last year or so, we've actually seen improvement there, which is a good thing.
So one of the things that I was reading about recently is the concern that, okay, so, you know, in a rising rates environment, some parts of the economy will benefit and some parts will suffer. But one of the things that jumped out at me was that, you know, companies that have issued a lot of debt will then see their sort of servicing costs actually go up. Are you concerned about that at all, Jonathan, or is it a very tiny, tiny concern?
You know, this time around, I think it's going to be a non-concern by and large. What companies have done is they've taken out their debt, which was expensive in the past or had very high interest rates, and they've retired a lot of that and replaced it with long-term debt at much lower rates. So they've termed out their debt. So this is a strange cycle where you could have interest rates go up, and for the most part, companies are not going to be as hurt by that the way that they would have been in the future. Perhaps that's some lessons learned during the downturn. Companies are not using short-term debt to finance themselves when, you know, in this environment, it's allowed them to put themselves in very good stead.
Jonathan, given that you see the S&P 500 dropping back down to sort of 14.25 range by the end of the year, you know, drop of 12%, and you still think that there's money to be made, how much of your portfolio would you have away from stocks now?
Gosh, I really leave that to, there are folks like Stefan Deo, who does asset allocation work for us out of London, and folks in the wealth management business who are really asset allocation guys. My focus is really on equities and where the opportunities are within equity markets. I do think if you have a long-term horizon, you have to like stocks. In the short run, like I said, I think it may be choppy and sloppy. But if you're thinking longer term, if you can get a yield of 2% on the S&P and 2.5% or more on a lot of reasonably high-quality stocks with underlying growth, that the long-term story, again, even if we're looking at weakness in the near term, I think the long-term story is one that forces you to be in equities.
Jonathan Golub, thank you so much for joining us and giving us your wisdom this afternoon. He is Chief Equity Strategist at UBS. He says overweight consumer discretionary and staples, in fact, and financials too are looking pretty good. And even if the S&P 500 drops maybe 12% or more this year, that stocks are still a place to be in the longer term. Stay tuned. The Apple Worldwide Developers Conference is on right now. We'll be getting headlines from Tim Cook coming up in just a few seconds.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.